You're listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KHEN LPFM Radio 106.9 Salida, Colorado, community-supported radio. We're streamed on the internet at khen.org. And if you'd like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs of Truth Quest with Melody, they're available at www.givemesometruth.info or link from the khen.org website. And I'm Melody, and my guest this evening is Bob Chapman, and he's returning again. And I think that if there's anything else, he speaks on many subjects, and his expertise is in financial arena. And if you'd like to go ahead and get started, Bob, and tell us what's going on out there.
Well, we live in a very, very exciting and very, very dangerous world today, financially and economically. Many of you are very well aware of that. We are looking at unemployment at 21.75%. That's the real unemployment. What you do is you take the government's official U6 figure, which is around 16 5/8, and you extract the a thing that they call the birth-death ratio, which is the birth and death of stocks and companies, and how many people they hire and fire. And so we have high unemployment, we have continuing lower real estate prices, both now not only in residential but in commercial as well. We have the states in the United States, about 40 of them, are on the verge of very bad problems financially. And then we also have, including the United States, 16 countries that are on the verge of collapse financially. And so it makes for a pretty frightening scenario. And, you know, people have me on their programs. I do about 30 of them a week. And I just was on one today, and the gentleman said, well, that wasn't in very inspiring news. I said, you had me here because you wanted the truth, not entertainment. And so that's the way it is. We live in a very difficult world, and the problems have been created in the United States by the Federal Reserve. And the 12 banks which own the Federal Reserve, that's a private corporation, and as many of you may know, that the House of Representatives, with 317 sponsors, passed the H.R. 1207, which went into an appropriations bill that should come up very shortly to audit and investigate the Fed. And so we at least have that going. From the social aspect, we're seeing a lot of people in America who are very unhappy about not only the economic situation, but the situation in Wall Street banking, insurance, transnational conglomerates, as well as in Washington. And I noticed a poll here a few days ago that said that when surveyed, American voters said they would not replace the current representative that they had in either the House or the Senate. And that percentage was 92% would not send the incumbent back. Now, that's rather astounding. And I think that was borne out by those three off-year elections, Maryland, New Jersey, and then in Massachusetts, which is the Mark Scott Brown election. It was the Phil Ted Kennedy seat. And coming from Massachusetts, it was really an eye-opener and a mouthful. I mean, you know, they're die-hard Kennedy fans, and But they're more concerned about where the country's heading, and they didn't care whether they sent Mickey Mouse to Congress. They just wanted somebody different. And I hope ardently that in this coming election that the American public throw 95% of the incumbents out. It doesn't matter what party they're in. They're all bad. They're all in the take. And it's joint campaign contributions and lobbying and all of the things that they legally get away with. They've got to end.
Yeah, but don't you... Having a knee-jerk reaction without somebody better to come in there isn't going to do us any favors, is it?
Could you do something with your volume? You're being very distorted now.
Okay, let's see.
Maybe turn it down a little.
All right, let me see if I can...
All right, try it again.
How's that?
That's good. Why don't we go ahead and ask me that question again?
Okay. Having a knee-jerk reaction... That's not going to do us any good, though, if we just put somebody else that's not any good in there, and it's still one of the controlled representatives. Is it?
Well, first of all, we do not have the luxury of time. If we do not get rid of the incumbents in the coming November election, we will never, ever have another legal avenue again to stop what's going on in Washington and in Wall Street and banking, et cetera. This is the last chance that Americans are going to have.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, we're talking about, you're citing a long-term solution to the problem. We can't do that. I mean, the people who get in there, we have to convince them that we want to get rid of campaign contributions. We or get commitments from them. We don't want any more lobbying. We don't want the Federal Reserve. We don't want executive orders that countermand everything that Congress does. It's turned the presidency into a dictatorship. We got to change all that. And granted, who knows what we're going to get in Washington. But I'll tell you something, it's better than what we've got. It can't be any worse.
Well, but the other thing that has concerned me is that they really haven't been addressing the computer situation with voting.
Well, you know, you're going to always have that, and I don't know what the answer is to that. But, you know, those problems exist, and we're just going to have to work against them. I can promise you that illegality was done in Massachusetts, but Scott Brown overcame that because he got enough votes to do that. And that's what we have to do. In the primaries, we have to soundly defeat these people by 58 to 40 or whatever. And that will change that problem in most areas. But we can't give up.
Right.
You know, you give up, you know what the alternative is?
Right.
A civil war, a revolution. And that's where this thing is headed. And we don't want that. I mean, if you've ever been in combat, you don't want to be there. Well, I've seen enough people die. And so this is the way we should go about it. If the American people are unwilling, but I do think they're willing, to change things, that's where it'll end up. But I do think we're going to get a big change in Congress. And I don't care which party has the majority. It doesn't make any difference. They're both bad. 95% of them are on the take. Most people don't realize that if you're running for Congress and you accumulate $40 million and you spend $30 and you get defeated, the other $10 million belongs to you, tax-free.
They get to keep it, huh?
That's right. Isn't that a great game?
Yeah, but you...
And that's how these people get paid off, whether they win or lose. They'll never make that much money in a lifetime.
So there's
so that is the avenue which has to be taken. Those are the things that have to be eliminated. And if that does not happen, it's over.
Right.
Go get your gun and start shooting, because that's what's going to happen.
How are other countries dealing with this situation? Because if you're saying there's other countries that are fixing to or on the verge of bankruptcy themselves, are they looking at this differently, or do they have other options?
Well, it all depends. Each and every country is different. Do the inhabitants have weapons? In most countries, they don't. Usually, you know, they have demonstrations, and then the army and the police come out and shoot them. I mean, Argentina is a good example. And but if the people get disturbed enough, are they going to do that?
So
now, one of the things that's going on in Asia and Latin America is that they're not being really hurt by America's depression, or Europe's for that matter. They will in time, and the GDP will probably drop maybe 5%. And let's say right now that are a plus 4, there'll be a minus 1. That's not good, but it's not bad either. I mean, we just recently had minus 6.5% in the United States about a year ago. And so there will be disruptions in some countries, but it's the financial end of it and that has to stand up. And a lot of countries don't have the debt that the 16 countries that I mentioned, didn't give you details on them, but I mentioned, and they're all bankrupt. And that's the United States, Great Britain, and then we have Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal, and Ireland, and we have the Ukraine, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Hungary, Romania, and Poland, and now on the verge is Denmark. So we get 16 countries right there.
These are not
third world countries. I mean, they're first to maybe first and a half countries. and so they're very viable entities with culture and education and so on.
Are they also not countries that seem to be resisting some of the changes that they're trying to implement in their one world banking system?
Well, no, I think they've gone along with the program and did the wrong thing. And in part, it's not their fault because they were given advice that was faulty. I mean, take Iceland as an example. The people didn't do anything. The bankers did. And they blew up the system. And now the British and I think the French that had branches of these banks in their countries, they're depositors lost all their money, and they want them to pay it back, and they're saying, no, I'm not going to do that. I didn't do it. The bankers did it. Why should we do that? And so that's the fight that's going on with Iceland. But what's going to happen here is this, and it'll happen after October, during or after October, to the end of next year. The people who just recently, behind the scenes, who have brought the problems of Greece to our attention, are using it as a distraction so that people in America and England and other places won't be overly concerned. They'll say, gee, look, we've got Greece over there. They've done a terrible, terrible job. And what they're also doing is running an economy which is 40% in the black market, and everybody's stealing from the government, and that's terrible. Well, it is terrible. but it happens in every country. I mean, look at the theft in the United States. It's colossal. And so this Greece affair was created deliberately to take the heat off the U.S. and England and others. Now, when the Maastricht Treaty was passed, and probably 99% of you don't know what that is, it was a treaty that was named after the city in Belgium where they had the talks to set up the Eurozone. At that time, there were 14 original members, it's now 16. And that's out of 27 European countries that belong to the European Union. Most people don't know that. I do because I publish these kind of things. I write about them. So anyway.
And when was this done?
Just about 10 years ago.
Okay.
And the late comers to the game of the 14 were Italy and Greece, and they had to qualify. And so what Goldman Sachs did for them was Mickey Mouse their books. And so, in other words, they lied about getting into the Eurozone. And I wrote about it at the time, but nobody was listening. And so Germany and France and the others, they just looked the other way because they were contiguous to their countries. And it was better that they would have them to sell goods to. And so that's why they didn't do anything about what was going on during that time period. So Greece being in problems is nothing new. Everybody in Europe knew it. It was just a question of when. So the bankers decided that, well, we'll create this distraction. Greece is a good way to do it. They're corrupt as they come. So let's do it. Now, we have 16 nations in the same position that Greece is in. So what are they going to do? Well, the powers behind government are the bankers. And the bankers know that in November, the chances are that a good many of the incumbents are going to be thrown out of office. People that they have bought and paid for. So what they might do is take all these countries that are on the edge, they might take and have a meeting with all the major countries in the world. And they had meetings like this in Washington at the Smithsonian talks of the 1970s. And then we had the talks in Paris in 1985. And then we had them again at the Louvre in 1987. And what they did was they got together and they revalued and devalued currencies, and they got together and they settled debt among nations. They're going to do the same thing again. The question is the timing. And the reason I say October is that October's the month prior to the election. And they might deliberately create enough economic and financial havoc so that the election would be put off temporarily. That's possible. It would be a good move on their part to do that. But I don't think they'll do it. So, sometime between October of 2010 and the end of 2011, there will be a meeting, like I've just described, and there will be the revaluation and devaluation of currencies against one another. There'll be a debt settlement. My guess is probably 30 cents on the dollar. And there will be an attempt to put together, using the G20 currencies, a new trading unit, not using the dollar anymore because of its problems, and that would be indexed and probably collateralized with probably about 15% in gold. That's if they really want it to work.
You know, what makes it what makes you think they're not going to do it sooner? And what I seem to be observing in how these guys work is we hear about these catastrophic or events like you're speaking of, and in the meantime, there's a little bit here and a little bit there. They may mess with one country's currency and their situation, kind of like with Iceland. So in the meantime, we're not paying attention to these incremental breakdowns.
Well, we are paying attention to the incremental breakdowns.
Okay.
But if they wanted it to happen, it would have already happened. I mean, just look at the spread of problems. It's incredible. I mean, they could have that sort of a meeting, which would be followed by a deflationary depression, today. But right. Timing is very important to these people. And if it's not in October, it could be by the end of the year, could be next year. But it's going to be soon. It's not going to be 3 or 4 years from now anymore.
Well, you were talking about towards the end of the year that something was going to be happening probably in January. Do you have any reasons why you think that didn't take place?
Well, first of all, I never said anything was going to happen in January. Other people did.
Okay.
But I didn't. That's January of this year. And it's the same charlatans who were out there flogging some kind of product like coins or stocks or whatever it is. They come up with these ideas. I seldom put time frames on things because I've learned in 50 years that it's too easy to be wrong.
Right.
But I do believe that we're in a situation today where we're fast approaching a deflationary meltdown, and they want to manage it, the bankers, to their best advantage. They don't care about the public, and neither do any public institutions. I mean, you can drop dead in the street and they walk over your body. And that's just the way it is today. And historically, from time to time, it's been that way. And so they want to time this thing to their best advantage, and I think they cannot probably hold it off any further than the end of next year. But it could very well happen in the time frame I've told you. And so here we have 16 major countries that are all bankrupt, and some of the biggest countries in the world, including the United States. And so that has to be dealt with. I mean, even today, the Bank for International Settlements and the FASB, which is the International Accounting Organization, are allowing companies to keep two sets of books.
So that isn't just here. They're letting them do it internationally.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's incredible. I mean, what have we ever heard in history that you get one set of books for the bad stuff and one set of books for the good stuff? And even on the good stuff, you're not marking your assets to the market. You're marking them to model. And the difference is market is reality. Model is whatever you want it to be. And so all of the financial statements from these big corporations are all phony. The biggest banks in America, seven big insurance companies, most of the brokerage firms, the big ones, they're all broke. They're broke. But you're not going to see that on the evening news because they own the evening news. So they're not going to tell you.
One of the things that I have an insurance license, and I am just inundated with companies trying to get me to sell annuities. What are your feelings on those things?
Well, if you buy an annuity in a mutual company, they have to buy bonds, like Northwest Mutual Life, that generally speaking is true. All the rest of the insurance companies buy bonds and stocks. Sometimes they even buy gold, both of them. by and large, mutual companies are in the bonds. Northwest Mutual actually owns gold, and that's why I mentioned them. I think they have $400 million worth of gold. And so if you own an annuity or a cash value life insurance policy, and the insurance company is a stock company, and they're in the stock market, in the bond market, and if the Dow goes back to 6,600 from where it's at now, about 10,100, and if interest rates rose from where they are, say by 5 percentage points, then the value of the bonds would go down. That means that the value of the annuities and the value of the portfolios being held by the life insurance companies that have cash life policies, they're going to go down in value. Now, that leads to insurance companies getting into financial trouble. And if they go bankrupt, you get nothing. The same thing is true if the FDIC runs out of money. Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, they insure the amounts of money in bank accounts up to $250,000.
So what do you see going on with...
Hold on one second.
Okay, all right, okay.
And so you don't want to have more than $250,000 in a bank account. And if the FDIC, which has $92 billion, runs out of money, and there's a good chance of that in the next year and a half, then what happens next? They've already been paid 3 years ahead of time of dues from the banks who are in the system. So they're not going to get any more income from there. They can get a line of credit from the U.S. government, American taxpayer, for $500 billion. But if 1,000 banks go on, that'll wipe out all that money. The $92 billion they've gotten, the $500 billion, that they can get on from the government. And the government knows that. So I don't think they're going to back them up. So I tell people who are subscribers that you only keep enough money in the bank personally for 3 months' expenses, but business is 6 months' expenses. All the rest of the money has got to be put someplace else. It can't be put in annuities. It can't be put into insurance, because they're vulnerable. Put them in the stock market. The stock market's rigged by the government. It's called the working group in financial markets. It's illegal. And the government's in, along with the Federal Reserve, is in the stock market all day, every day, manipulating it. So you really don't want to be there either.
Well, what about the retirement accounts, too?
They're going to get slaughtered. But the bottom line is, where do you go? And the only place I know of to go to are gold and silver-related assets. Now, in retirement, that's a good question. And the reason why is the government just finished commentary and hearings on a new plan to issue government-guaranteed annuities. Now, I don't know which way they're going to go with this. There's a number of ways, but here's the three major ways. They may put a tax on every wage earner of 5%, and that money will go to the government, and they will guarantee you X amount of annuity for when you retire. A second possibility is they may say to you, well, what you can do is give us in the federal government a portion or all of your retirement that you now have that's sitting with XYZ Securities on behalf of ABC Company. But it's there for you. So if you have $100,000 and you say, well, I want the government to handle that for me, not the stock market, well, what they will do is put a hold on that amount of assets being held that's being invested, and they will create $100,000, and that will be used to purchase bonds that run the government. It's a pay of, it would be a pay-as-you-go plan that would be voluntary. Or they could have a mandatory plan, which I don't think they'll go after at this time. What they'll do, I think, is put their foot in the door with the voluntary plan, and 6 months to a year later make it mandatory. But they are after the $14 trillion that are in retirement plans because the government is broke.
So if you were in that position looking at a retirement plan, what would you do?
It varies. Number one, some people who are retired or have a retirement plan, either or, can borrow from their plan. Some can borrow as much as 70%. Some are only 20. Some are nothing at all. So you'd be borrowing your own money, so you're paying interest to yourself. So you could extract money doing that in those kind of plans. But there's a lot of plans. You can't do anything like that. And so you're stuck. And if your plan goes broke, let's see, it's being run by the Teamsters Union or General Electric or whoever. If it goes broke, you don't get any check anymore. And worse yet, there is no money left in Social Security, only the current income, which cannot meet even this year's demands for cash to pay current retirees who paid for years and years into the system. The reason why is because since its inception, the money that was paid into Social Security goes into the general fund. And Social Security each year receives bonds in the excess amount that they have put into the program. So they're sitting with a bunch of bonds that are non-negotiable. But they receive interest in those bonds. And even with that interest this year and the projected income for the year, revenue if you may, they don't have enough to pay out. So it's not 20 or 30 years away, it's now. So they got to fund that thing. And that's how they think they're going to do it. Either with a 5% tax or voluntary participation or mandatory participation in a government annuity plan that isn't worth the paper it's written on. It's just another scam.
You know, with what took place a little over a year ago with the financial markets, I just have to wonder why it's taken them so long to, you know, make this whole situation collapse, or they just want to keep it going and patching things together here and there. Now, I know you say that it's not going to continue on forever, but I'm just amazed that it's continued on this long.
This really should have happened, and they should have let it happen, in 1990 to 1992. They had a great opportunity to purge the system and set it right, and they refused to do it. And so this has been coming for a long time. The program I just told you about regarding retirement plans in government, they've been talking about this behind the scenes that you don't know about, but I do, since 1995. So this is really nothing new if you, you know, have your finger on the pulse. And, of course, that's why people subscribe to the International Forecaster.
I wanted to get into a little bit of the things that are going on with the transportation arena, and I think that there may be a tie-in with something going on with, say, like that accident that took place with, I mean, I know it's very remote, and this is just something that I've been looking at is, you know, with these small plane accidents, because that accident that took place in Austin was a day after something had, you know, one had happened in the Tesla motors, and there were several others that took place right in that time frame. Now I realize that this happens, but I have to wonder, when you have a an automobile industry being totally gutted in this country, and then you find that Toyota is threatened, and it almost makes me, and you also have the airline industry being totally harassed with various things. It just makes me wonder if they're after transportation as a whole, or if it's just, do you think it's a coincidence?
First of all, the answer is yes, they are. Secondly, I have no proof whatsoever that the individuals who with the automobile company, whether that was an accident or otherwise, I think it would be a stretch. Now, the fellow who committed suicide did just that in Austin just recently, or Houston, wherever it was. And in my newsletter, the International Forecaster, today's issue, I have his letter in there, which our government demanded be taken off the Internet. And the reason for that was that so many people are going through the same dreadful experience that he did with the IRS. And they don't want more people going off the deep end, so to speak. Another reason why they took it down is that he doesn't belong to the Tea Party movement, so they can't get any political mileage out of it. So they want to shut off debate totally on it, because he was another person who was liberal, who just didn't understand what's going on behind government. And that's why I'm on the radio all the time telling people what's going on. And it doesn't know any party. The people who are paid off in government, no matter what party they're in, they're paid off. And so the problem is in all aspects of government.
I found it rather curious that the building that was housed in was the Echelon buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost have to wonder if they were somewhat aware of what was happening with this man prior to this. But, you know, whether it is or not, it still makes me wonder, when you've got Maurice Strong in China working with that, are they going to introduce that cherry over here? And is this another way of, like they did with Toyota originally, when some of these car companies like Honda and Toyota both came in this country with very little automobiles that got great gas mileage?
Well, they're simple cars, and there are people who want that. They don't want to ever have to look under the hood. And there are American cars like that as well. With that situation with Toyota, I believe there is some grounds to think that government might be pursuing this agenda against Toyota. And the reason I say that is, number one, the Japanese hadn't bought any securities, you know, U.S. Treasury paper, for 3 years. They held what they had and rolled it, but they didn't increase it. You have a new government in Japan, first one since the Second World War, that hasn't been from one party. And so it could be that they were threatening them because they were pulling away from the U.S., and they wanted U.S. troops out of Okinawa as well as Japan. and they've been pushing hard for it. The people want them out of there. And I think that they fired a shot over the mast of the Japanese rigor, so to speak, and they're telling them, look, you keep this up, and we're going to make your life miserable. And don't put that past the people who run the American government, because they do it all the time. They either do what we do, or we're going to destroy you. And that's a fact.
Well, that it kind of made me curious, because you had other automobile companies that had defective vehicles that they didn't affect that many, which that would totally, could totally bring a company down with that many vehicles being recalled.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. And so there's a lot of reasons for that kind of thing to be pulled off. And I believe that they did that. They say, look, this is what we're going to do to you. And if you push us any further, we'll do something else. And the Japanese will continue to push, and they will do other things. The people who run the American government are very evil people. I've talked to the heads of state of more than one government that told me that the U.S. came to them and said, look, this is what you're going to do. And if you do not do that, we will cut off everything to where you are from the United States. No tourism, no air travel, no boat travel, no visas to get into the United States. We will shut down your banking institutions because you won't be able to clear anything with American banks. We'll cut off your internet, your telephone, your faxes, and your postal service from the United States. And this is a fact. I've sat at dinner with heads of state and ex-heads of state who have told me this personally. And I've had people in intelligence organizations tell me the same thing. So that's what the American government does. And they do it all the time. And they do it in every country.
Well, they couldn't have, learned to do this on their own. I'm just wondering if, there's going to be a point in time when all these other countries are going to do something about this. And
like what? Attack America with the biggest military in the world? No.
No.
Not going to happen.
Hmm.
The best way to do that for foreign countries, if they don't like what America is doing and they don't export to the United States, is put up tariffs so they can't bring goods into the country. But, the United States is the one that should be putting tariffs up. We've lost 7.5 million jobs in the last 9 full years exactly. And outsourcing, offshoring, free trade, globalization. And so we got every right in the world as Americans to put up trade barriers on goods and services. And they should. Unless they don't want any jobs in America left.
You don't think this is kind of like a Hegelian dialectic going on to where, the globalists are in cahoots with us and we're just playing the good cop, bad cop scenario and then kind of squeezing the little guys around the rest of the world so that they, they're going to bend no matter what direction they're pushed to go?
These people control all the major governments in the world. They all cooperate with one another. Anybody steps out of line, the hammer comes down. And they, they have wars every 5 or 10 or 15 years. They finance both sides. It's good business, and they keep people worried about the war instead of worrying about the economic and financial circumstances within their country. Just read history. It's replete with it.
Right. I wanted to get off in a little bit different direction that's covered in various aspects, usually in the back of your international forecaster, because you seem to cover a lot of health issues. And I'm wondering what your feelings are on what's going on with Codex Alimentarius.
I started writing about it 20 years ago, when almost nobody had heard about it. In fact, I belonged to the National Health Federation in 1966. I was one of their probably original members. I've been doing vitamins, minerals, herbs, hormones for 47 years. And that's probably why I'm as healthy as I am today at 74. And they want to destroy the ability of people to get vitamins, minerals, and herbs, and hormones, unless they buy a prescription. In Germany, as an example, you can get these things, but it's usually by prescription. It has to come from a doctor. And, of course, the prices are absolutely outrageous. And they want to, they being the drug companies, which are controlled by the people who control all the governments, they're better known as the Illuminati. These are the people who control the drug companies, and that's why they want all of these health food products off the market, because they want to control the market.
Well, I've been looking at some of the, going into some of the, I'm trying to think of the term that they put up there on their website, that a lot of these health food companies or whatever being getting pharmaceutical companies on their boards. Have you noticed that?
No, I hadn't, but it's probably a way to survive, and they probably will in time if they haven't already allow the pharmaceutical company to buy into the company, and then eventually they'll take them over, and that could be what that is all about.
That's kind of been what I've been suspecting, because I've heard about a lot of these health food, homegrown health food companies being bought up by the larger international companies.
Well, it could be right. Look at what Monsanto did in the growing area with seeds, genetically modified. I've been on that for years, and, you know, so far they've won. And that's another thing that we don't know, what harm the human body has been able to be subject to because of GM products. And their excuses, or they got to feed the world. Their excuses, spurious at best. It's all about money. It's all about control.
Well, isn't Nestle like one of the largest food companies in the world? And yet they're very involved in water.
Yes, there's several large international corporations that are involved in water, and other utilities as well, electric, nuclear. They also get involved in toll roads and things like that. And so, yes, they have stepped into areas that have been traditionally governmental. I mean, you know, there's a big argument going on in Nevada right now over the power company, and they want to lay off a group of people, and they want to raise rates. It has nothing to do with reality. It's kind of like a mini Enron all over again. And every time they private companies have gone into utilities, we'll call them, there's been problems, lots of problems. I mean, some of the water companies that have gone into South America, you know, as soon as they get their contract, they go in, they never upgrade anything. They give water to people, and they quadruple the charge. and the people involved in the government get paid off, so nobody says anything. It's all about crime.
So it kind of looks like they're kind of letting being allowed to expand in all aspects of our lives with their privatization, and that the governments are just kind of in cahoots with it all then.
Well, the people within the governments, governments don't make illegal decisions. The people who run them do.
Correct. So, anything that you think that we should bring up that we haven't covered here that seems to be, on your mind?
You know, the cutting edge in business right now is bankruptcy. And I've really outlined foreign as well as domestic business and where governments are headed as well. I mean, we've got 40 states in the United States are broke. I just did a piece for today's article. They're laying off 900 teachers in the San Francisco Bay Area. 100,000 teachers could lose their jobs because the state is bankrupt. I mean, who's going to teach the children? Are they going to put 100 kids in a class? Very poor planning. And look, the stock market is up. Supposing it was 6,600 again several months from now. I mean, that would be dreadful. And it is going to happen.
Do you follow any of Walter Burian's work?
Yes. And I disagree.
You disagree with him. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And why do you?
Because I don't believe that municipalities have secret accounts where they have piles and piles of investments in it that they don't tell the people about. Those are normal investments that are made by those entities for retirement or excess funds and things like that. And I just think he's on the wrong track.
Hmm. Okay. And as far as the I'll drop that thought. So, anything else that might be of interest here that we'd like to cover?
Well, I think that what people have to do is they have to get ready for more difficult times ahead. And you have to anticipate the possibility of losing your job, because I don't think there's going to be a recovery of any consequence. And, you have to look to see how safe you think you are. Second of all, I think all people should be putting extra food away. You can do it with canned goods, but you got to rotate them. And they have to be rotated usually every 2 years. But you can go to dehydrated and freeze-dried foods and have them in your home in case you run out of money. At least you can eat. And if there's disruption in America, then I think we could lose the loss of utilities. And so you should have something to be able to filter water, because water is as important as food is, if not more so. And if things lead to anarchy, which they could, you have to be able to defend your family. And so you should make allowances for that as well. Those are very, very important things. Beyond that, if you got money for investment, I know of no other way, place to go than gold and silver. That's it.
Now, I did remember what I wanted to bring up here, because when you were talking about bankruptcy and governments in that position, one of the things that I observed a lot taking place with a lot of corporations, it was though bankruptcy was a form of doing business. Do you think governments are in that position?
I don't understand what you mean.
Okay, what I'm saying is, it's like sometimes these, you would have these utility companies, say, come in and go be on the verge of bankruptcy, and then they would make a plea to the public and the government, and they would come in and bail them out. And then a few years later, same with the airline industry, and they would go through these cycles. And it was though the bankruptcy were planned, because it was like they could make money doing it.
That's right. And the people who run the companies, if they know that that's going to happen, they enrich themselves. Nobody should be too big to fail. And that's what the problem is in America today. They should be allowed to go into bankruptcy. And I told you all the entities that are involved. And that would include utilities. And if a utility goes bankrupt, the federal government or the state will have to take it over, usually the state, and make it work. They don't have any choice.
So what I'm trying to say here is, you're in a gray area. They should be allowed to go bankrupt, but at the same time, if you start seeing a lot of cycles in it, then you're starting to wonder whether you want to keep bailing these guys out and or letting them reinvent themselves.
Well, if they go bankrupt, you're not bailing them out. But what we are doing is not letting them go bankrupt. We are bailing them out. What you're saying is, we really shouldn't be doing this because they do it over and over again. And you're right. It's a racket.
Okay. That was something I just noticed, and if we don't address it, and the reason I was also hitting on the transportation thing is my understanding that there is some kind of high-speed rail system that maybe is in the works, and if we degrade our current transportation system and price us out of being able to travel, then more people will possibly support this new system of rails. Are you?
That's true.
Okay.
But the problem is, at this stage, who's going to be able to afford it?
Right.
And if they, in transportation, continue to put these obscene controls on people being transported from one place to another, people are not going to continue to travel, and that's what's happening. And I wouldn't get on a plane unless I absolutely had to. And I don't want to go through their machines that can destroy my DNA and give me cancer, and there's a very good chance of that. And so I won't go through that.
Well, the other thing that I wanted to bring up with that, if we also observe from past history with the rail system, how a lot of the same things that has taken place with them we'd be vulnerable to again if we do that knee jerk and go in and support a new rail system. Not that I'm against that we shouldn't have one, but you know, if we sink a ton of money into it and then it doesn't make it, then where are we in the end?
We're right where we are with Amtrak. And if you've noticed with airfares, they've almost doubled in the last few years.
Right, right. Well, it looks like we've come to an end here. And if you have any closing comments, Bob, go ahead.
Well, I'd like to let people know how they can get a free introductory copy of the Forecaster. And the Forecaster is published by email on Wednesdays and Saturdays, about 40 pages each time, and we cover business, finance, economics, social, political issues all over the world. We also have a hard copy for those who are not on the Internet, and you can get a free introductory copy by going to any one of three places. TheInternationalForecaster.com. TheInternationalForecaster.com. You can email us, and we answer everybody's questions as well, at bob@intforecaster.com, bob@intforecaster.com, or you can call toll-free 800-375-4188, 800-375-4188. 4188.
And Bob, I want to thank you again and helping me stretch my my expanse on understanding what's going on out in the world. And again, I appreciate the subscription myself so that I can help and get my public, my listening audience on top of, too. So thanks again.
Okay, and when you want me, just let me know.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.